This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is April 23, 1982. The interview is taking place at the home of Rolf Strum and is being conducted by Inger Carr. What is your full name, please?
Rolf Strum.
That's all.
I changed my name when I took out my citizen paper. It was Carl Rudolf Wikström in Sweden. But when I took out my citizen papers in this country, I changed it to Rolf Strum. So made legally Rolf Strum.
So you left out the Wick on the
Wikström? Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Why did you do that?
Well, it was so doggone many Wikströms here, you know. And then it got to be more Strums than Wikströms after a while. Yeah.
When and where were you born?
Well, I was born the 19th of March, 1896, in a farmer village outside of the city of Luleå. And this village was called Alvik.
Can you spell that?
A-L-V-I-K.
Now, where in Sweden is that?
Well, that's just outside of Luleå, northern part of Sweden, in the provinces called Norrbotten.
Norrbotten?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And of course, we moved later on, but that's where I was born, you know, in that village.
What were your parents' names?
Eh?
Your parents' names.
Oh, well, you see, I was raised by my mother.
Oh.
My father went to this country just about the time when I was born.
Oh, he did, and he didn't come back?
No.
What was his name?
Nystrom.
What was the first name?
Carl Nystrom.
And where did he come in this country?
Well, he went to Colorado.
Oh, and he just stayed there?
Yeah.
What was your mother's name then?
Emma Wikström.
So you were all named Wikström then?
Well, yeah, they were never married, you see.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And what did your mother do?
She was a caterer.
Oh.
And a good one. So she raised me, and then I was 11 years old when she got married. And I had four half-sisters and two half-brothers.
Oh, who did she marry?
She married a fellow with the name Oscar Lundquist in the same village where I was born there, where I was raised there.
And what did he do?
He was, he worked at various different jobs, you know, as a laborer, little steel mill there and stevedoring and done a lot of things, you know, like that.
Well, did you move then once you got married?
No,
or
no.
Did you stay in the same house?
Oh, yeah, I stayed with them in the same place.
I see, but when your mother got married, did she move to a different house than
what you've been
living in before?
It so happened that my stepfather won some money in the lottery.
Oh.
Enough to buy a house. and so they bought a house and moved to another village next to this one where we lived in when they got before they got married.
So were you raised on a farm, kind of?
No, it was farming country, but we didn't have no farming ground, just laborers. That's all.
I see.
Yeah.
So just a house was all.
Yeah, that's all. That's a place to be in. I started to work in a sawmill when I was 10 years old.
So you didn't ever do farm work then in Sweden?
No, I never did no farm work in Sweden.
I see.
No.
Do you remember your grandparents?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, yes.
Can you tell me their names and what they did?
Yeah, well, my...
Your mother's
grandfather on my father's side, you know. He was the governor of that province for a number of years.
Oh, what was his name?
Nystrom was his name.
First name?
That I'm not clear about.
Okay.
I think it was Carl Nystrom, but I'm not sure. And he lived to be 105 years old.
What about his wife, the grandmother?
I don't know anything about her at all.
You don't know her
name? I think she died young, you know. I don't know a thing about her. In fact, I know very little about that part of the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
But my grandfather on my mother's side, his name was August Wickstrom, and there was about six or eight in his family, kids, you know. Mm-hmm. I had one aunt that was alive, you know, that and she used to be around my mother a lot, and then uncles.
What was his name, the grandfather?
August Wickstrom.
Yeah, what did he do?
All his life he used to work in the timber woods, you know, go up there and hew square timbers and things like that, like they used to years ago, you know, see up there, up among the laps up there in the timber woods. And he was somewhat of a carpenter too, you know, but he was no farmer either.
So how about his wife? Do you remember her, your grandmother?
Well, my grandmother, she, on my mother's side, she died when my mother was, I think she was 10 years old when she died, 9 or 10 years old.
So you don't know her name or anything then?
Yeah, Annalena was her name. Annalena, I don't know what her maiden name was, but that I remember that was her name. But I don't remember. I never even seen her.
No. How about your brothers and sisters then? What? Tell me their names and what they did.
Well, I had two brothers. One of them was a carpenter, and they were both. Yeah, and he was a good one, working around carpenter work in that city of Luleå. And he was also a very good skier. Long-distance skiing. See, I got a trophy right there. It's that up there on that shelf that he won at the ski race. And so he got married and had two, three kids.
What was his name?
Torsten Lundqvist. And my other brother, Alan Lundqvist, he was over here to see me and stay there about 3 months, and he went home and he died when he got back home after he'd been home 3 weeks. He died from a heart attack.
What did he do for a living?
He was working that in a steel mill, but near all his life, you know. And then my sisters, they all been here to see me, those that are alive. My oldest sister was here last summer, and she was with me here about 4 months. And she used to, well, she was born the same year I came to this country.
Mm.
And then my two other sisters, they were here too, and stayed there about a month and a half or 2 months, you know.
They were married and lived in Sweden?
Yeah, they're married. Oh, they're all married. Now there's three of them alive.
What were their names?
One of them is Marta Lundgren, and the other one, her name was Ebba Thier. That's an old Swedish name, you know. She's married, living in middle part of Sweden.
So you just had two sisters?
Okay.
You just had two sisters? I thought you had more.
Three.
What was the other one's name?
And that's the one that was here. There were two of them came together and one of them came by herself.
I see.
And two of them are dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So you went to school there until you were how old? You go to school in the...
In Sweden?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I had about... I really didn't have more than about 5 years of grade school.
Oh. And then you went to work?
I went to work when I was 10 years old. I was pretty good size for big for my for my age, but I was supposed to be 12 years old when I went to work, you know. But
what did you do when you were that young?
I worked in a sawmill. It's hard to explain to you just how they had men that were cutting their boards, you know, by hand, mm-hmm. according to measurement. Some was metric and some was fractional, like here, see? And then they didn't have any regular dry kilns in Sweden in the sawmills. They built great big piles, 60 feet high, you know, and had so that the air could circulate through the boards and dried it that way. And then they had men going there with hand saws and saw off the ends, you know, to cut the lumber to measurement. And then kids to come up and pick up them nubbins and pack them out in the alley and dump them over the side of the pile.
Did you have to work to help your mother support you? Or?
Yeah, I made 75 Swedish cents a day.
You had to do it.
Oh yes, yeah. I gave her the money.
Oh, I see. So you lived alone. Just you and her lived alone.
For the first year. But then she got married when I was 11 years old. But I lived home with them too till I came to this country.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't. You didn't live with your grandparents or anything.
Oh no.
You lived alone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you remember about your childhood when you started work so early?
Well, I had a nice childhood. My mother was awful nice, you know. And, mm-hmm. and of course, it was awful poor up there. Oh, my goodness. It was they had that big general strike there in Sweden. Oh. And people, it was rough.
When was the general strike? You mean all workers?
Yeah, the whole country went on strike.
Oh. What year was that?
1909. But you see, what made Sweden so poor that time, when this here Bernadotte was made king of Sweden, mm-hmm. in order to get the kingdom of Sweden, he signed over a 99-year lease to England and Germany. England got the steel and Germany got the lumber industry, and that's practically all that Sweden had. So the Swedish people were serfs to these two countries, you know. All the profit went back to Germany and England, and the Swedish people in Sweden, they lived an awful life. That I know, I lived in it, so I know. Yeah. And 1936, that 99-year lease went back to Sweden.
Oh.
So now they own their own. Nobody got nothing, and the Swedes are getting along a whole lot better too, since they got back what they should have had in the first place.
Sure. How was that strike settled? Do you remember?
Oh, they lost out, the working people lost out.
Did.
Oh, yeah. That was the time when the iron mines up there in northern part of Sweden, it was a mass migration to Brazil from there. So an awful lot of the miners went to Brazil and settled down there, you know. And the climate wasn't suited for them, they all died, you know.
Is that right?
It was, I think, I wouldn't say for sure, I don't remember the exact amount, but was something like a couple thousand people that left the mines and went down there to try it out down there. But the whole thing was a hoax from the beginning to end, you know. They died. That's, they couldn't take the climate. So that's... it was a lot of labor unrest that time in Sweden. Plenty of it.
Do you remember any of the joys of childhood? Or how about Christmas? Did you have some fun? How about Christmas time?
Oh, we always had a beautiful time at Christmas.
Did you?
No matter how poor we were, we had a good time. Yes.
What did you do?
Well, we had Christmas trees, you know, and there was a lot of festivals in the schools there. And of course, people were very religious, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not so now, I don't think, but they sure were then, you know. Uh-huh.
So you remember going to church when you were a child?
Oh, yes. Oh,
my. Your brother took you to church all day?
Yes. Well, we lived from approximately 12 miles from the church. Mm-hmm. And all the people, the farmers that had farms, they had little cottages built right around the church. So when Easter and Christmas and New Year's come, they went and stayed about a week, you know, in there, so they could take in all the sermons, you know, and live. I got a picture. I'll show you a picture of the houses there that we lived in.
So
and that's where we went when we were confirmed to this church. I don't know, but I kind of think that church was built at the time of the Catholics. I'm not so sure, but it's pretty old.
What's the name of the church, do you know?
Huh?
What was the name of the church?
Well, it's called Gamla Stadens Kyrka. Well, that's the same as the old town church. Mm-hmm. This place was called, then Luleå itself, that got to be a big town, but this was the first one. So they call it Gamla Staden, the old town. Yeah.
Do you remember some particular foods you had at Christmas time? What did you have particular for Christmas in line of food?
Oh, yes. They used to have lutefisk, of course. They had lutefisk and they had a kind of a soup made out of dried fruit. I don't know just what you would call that in English. And
what did you call it in Swedish?
Fruktsoppa. Mm-hmm. Well, and then they had a lot of other things. Cookies of all kinds. And they went as far as they could go. We get an apple once in a while, too, you know. Fruit was cash up in that country.
Yes. Yeah. Well, now you went and stayed in these cottages. Did your mother do the cooking there for Christmas, or?
Well, they used to cook it at home and then take it with them when they went.
See.
You see, in the winter time, it was everything froze. You know, all you had to do was to set it in the outside, and it would keep for months.
I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you stay with other people then, or did you each one of you have a cottage?
Yeah, well, you see, we never did go into the real church itself, because we used to do our celebrating in the village. They had what they called missionshuset. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a place where the preacher would come. It was not the priest himself, but the preachers would come there and give sermons, and the priest would come too once in a while, you know, and mm-hmm. give a sermon, you know, in that place, you know. Yeah.
But where were the cottages, though? Where were the cottages? Were they?
Oh, they were in Luleå.
Oh,
yeah.
But didn't you go stay there too?
No, I never seen the inside of a college in Sweden in my life.
No, the cottages that were around the church.
Yeah, that was, but you see, that's about the same distances. I'd say 10, 12 miles, you know, from the village, you know, where I lived in. Mm-hmm. About 12 miles from the village where I lived in, where them cottages were. Mm-hmm. And they didn't belong, they belonged to, each farmer had their own cottage.
So your mother didn't have one?
No, we didn't have one. No.
So you didn't go stay in them?
No.
You went to the mission house for church?
That's right. The only time I went to the college back there is, or cottages back there is when I was confirmed.
I see, then you stayed in them?
Yeah, then I stayed there. Mm-hmm. It took 2 weeks to get confirmed.
How old were you then?
I was 14.
But you hadn't gone to school that time, though, had you?
You
quit school, you said.
No, I didn't quit school. I just got ahead a year, you know, by hook or crook. I had a a very good memory when I was a kid. Mm. And I got... when I went to the kindergarten school, I was supposed to go 2 years, you see. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of that, I made it in 1 year.
I see.
Because I could learn fast, you know. So, and then I went to 3 years to the regular school and after kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So I got 4 years of school. I should have had five. Two at kindergarten and then three otherwise. That's how it went.
Oh, just five, I see.
Yeah.
So then, how about, were there any other customs or folk beliefs that your mother taught you? Yeah. Like folk stories or anything like that, any stories that your mother told you or... like about trolls or...
Yeah, I guess I've forgotten. There was quite a few how to live when she was a little girl. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, to tell you the truth, I don't remember too much about that because I guess I didn't pay enough attention to what she told me. You know, mm-hmm. It was... pretty much the same in her days. In my days, it was in her day. Mm-hmm. She was only 19 years old when I was born. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you kept working in the sawmill till how long?
I went to this country when I was 16 years old.
You were 16. You worked in a sawmill all the time?
Yes, in that same sawmill. I worked in that same sawmill every summer.
Did you do something different in the sawmill after a while? Well, you got older?
No, yes. Then I was advanced to the second two, the last 2 years I was there. I got a raise in pay, $1.25. I pulled out the boards for these here lumber pilers when they come up with a lumber up on top of them piles, then we had to grab them boards, pull one that way and one that way, two kids. And believe me, we were working. Yeah, 10 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to come to America?
Oh, I started to figure on that always.
Why?
Well, to get better my conditions.
How did you hear about it?
It was a lot of talk about that in Sweden. You know, so many went. You know, there was an awful lot of emigrants went. But then to get the money, mm-hmm. Well, by golly, my mother had worked for a lady there that had a wholesale grocery business. And she liked her pretty well. So she went to see her and borrowed the money from her for me to come over here, 600 crowns. And that was a lot of money then days, you know, 600 crowns.
Your mother must have wanted you to come.
Eh?
Your mother must have wanted you to.
Well, you know, it was a case of me. I had two brothers then born, and my sister was born the same year I come over here. Mm-hmm. Three of them, and the house was small, and naturally I would have to get out sooner or later anyway, you know. So she didn't want me to go so early, but she thought it was the best anyway because I was so set on it. Mm-hmm.
When did you come then? What was the date? What was the date you left then?
I left in June 1912. Mm. And this lady here, after much thought, she gave me the money. So she told me, she says, you're going to pay me now, aren't you? I said, you can be sure I am. Well, my grandfather had learned me to handle an axe, you know, so I was a pretty good axeman, even if I was only a kid, you know. Mm-hmm. And I come here to Seattle and went to work here at Arlington in the logging camp, Cobbin Healy.
Tell me about your trip over first.
Oh, from Sweden?
Yeah.
Oh.
What did you take?
Well, I came over on the Lusitania.
You did?
Yeah. It was, it only took us about 6 days, 6 or 7 days.
You sailed from Stockholm, or?
No, I went from Sweden down to Gothenburg. Mm. And from there to Hull, England, and then across England on the train to Southampton. And there at Southampton, we boarded the Lusitania. And then they stopped one day at Queenstown in Ireland to take on emigrants there, you know. And so they couldn't land there, but they were anchored out in the bay, and the ferries come with the people on the boat.
How about the trip across the North Sea? Was that pretty rough?
Yeah, the North Sea, it was a little rough. Yeah, I wasn't used to the sea either, you know. But it only took about 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Did you get sick on there?
Hmm?
Did you get sick on the boat?
Yes, I'm a poor sailor. I'm an awful poor sailor. Yeah. Yeah, no, that is something I would never make a seaman.
What about in England? What did you do in England?
No, we stayed there in the emigrant hotels in England. Mm-hmm. And then went on the train from...
How was that? How was it in England? How did you like that?
Well, it was so strange to me to see people like that. I'd never seen anything like that before, you
like
know.
What?
They live so different there from what they do in Sweden. You know.
Like what?
Well, like kids running around shining shoes on the street and so on, and the way of living, you know, there's such a big difference, you know. Mm-hmm. I really didn't stay there long enough to get to see how they lived or anything.
But you thought it was different anyway.
Yeah, it was different, yeah.
And then you sailed from where to New York?
Well, then New York, then
well,
we landed.
How was the trip across?
Oh, beautiful, across on the Lusitania. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was an immense boat, you know. That was a big boat. And the Polacks were by themselves, and the Scandinavians by themselves, and the Finns and Scandinavians, we were together.
Oh.
They had it segregated, so there was, and then Greeks, you know, they each one had their own quarters so they could be by themselves, you know.
Is that right?
And they had a mess house there where you got your meals, you know, same as you would in a logging camp there, 3 meals a day, and the food wasn't too awful bad. I didn't like it because I was used to it.
Was it different?
Hmm?
Was the food different than what you'd had?
Yes, oh yes. So
like
much
what?
Well, you take in them Scandinavian countries 10 days, they lived on milk a lot, you know. And things like that. We wasn't used to the kind of food like soup with spices in it and things. We didn't have that in those years. Mm. We didn't hardly ever have any meat in Sweden. Maybe once a month we get a hold of a piece of meat. Outside of that, it was salt pork, you know, and herring, you know, salt herring and things like that. Mm-hmm. And things that they're made out of milk, you know, like. Mm-hmm. Different.
So you thought the food was kind of spicy on the boat?
Yeah, I didn't like it, but it didn't take me long to. I got used to that pretty quick. Uh-huh. So then by golly, from there, from New York.
Well, you know, you go through Ellis Island in New York?
Yeah, landed in Ellis Island, and then took the train from New York to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. How was that train trip?
Yeah, well, that was something I liked that pretty well, you know, gosh. There was, we went to New York Central to Minneapolis. When we got to Minneapolis, we took the Chicago, Milwaukee, and went through the Dakotas and Montana and into Seattle. And then when we got to Dakota, a moving picture outfit got on the train. Dustin Farnum and William Farnum and Catherine Williams were going to go into Montana and make a western in there. And I'd never seen them guns, oh boy. Oh, and there was a drunken Indian that picked them up and laid them down alongside of the stove, and he slept there till they took them off when they got to Montana. My gosh, that was really something for me to see.
I bet.
And I was looking at them guns, and so they were started to make fun of my clothing, you know. Well, you know how we dress so different in Sweden from here.
How was it different?
Well, the clothes were different, you know. The styles, you know, very narrow pants and long shoes and kind of funny coats, you know. See, that it was nothing, no style to anything. But then, by golly, I got an alley this. Catherine Williams took a hand. And boy, did she read the law to them, the guys.
Oh. Ooh.
Boy.
Right?
And I could sit down alongside of her. I couldn't talk to her, but my partner could talk English, you know, the fella I came over with.
You know. Oh, you came over with somebody?
Yes, that had been here before.
Oh, who was that?
Well, he's dead now, you know. He's
who was it, though?
Huh?
Who was it? What was his name?
Well, his name was William Sandman, and he was a neighbor in the old country, you know.
Oh.
But I didn't know him before. He was in this country before I was over here. Mm-hmm. So he came back for a trip to Sweden to visit his parents and went back to Seattle again, and I went with him, so I had a good...
So that's why you decided to go then, because you
yes,
had to go with him.
Yes, and he had almost broke his neck trying to get on the Lusitania. No, I mean on the Titanic. The Titanic went down that year.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
He was pretty fortunate.
Yeah, I was fortunate to have him.
Yeah, but he was fortunate to have... gone on the Lusitania.
Yes, yeah, he was all talking about that all the time.
Mm-hmm. So
that
helped you, so you could get food on the train and so forth.
Oh, then. Yes, oh, yes. And, you know, in the northern countries there in Sweden, I guess it's the climate. The people have a good complexion. Mm-hmm. I guess it's from the climate, you know. And I had an awful nice complexion. And this moving picture actress, she said, if I had a complexion like that, she couldn't get over it. I got a picture here that I took when I was on your shoulder.
That's good. So she kind of took care of you then, huh? She...
Yeah, I got a job. You see, I really had a place to go here.
What did you think of of the country when you first came?
Everything was big. Yeah, it's so different, you know.
Oh, everything seemed big to you?
Yeah.
How about the train ride?
Yeah, the train ride was, it was tiresome, you know, and hot in the 4th of July, and smoke. It was forest fires, you know, in the Cascades area.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Were you stopped with the forest fires, or did you just keep going?
No, they kept on going, but it was a lot of smoke, you know.
I see.
Yeah, well.
What did you think of America then?
Oh, so dirty. Well, I didn't know what to think of it. But I should have gone to Nordstrom, from Nordstrom shoe store there.
Why?
Well, my mother and Nordstrom were cousins.
They were the one that started Nordstrom's?
Yes.
What was his name?
John Nordstrom. He's born in the same village where I come from there.
Is that right?
Yes.
And he started the Nordstrom stores?
Yes. Yeah. He made his money up in Alaska in the gold rush up there, you know. Mm-hmm. Some money, I don't know just how much, but he made enough to get started. And his partner, Wallen, at that time was a shoemaker. So that's why they started a little shoe store down here at the public market.
What year was that?
1905.
Started before you came then?
Oh, yes. You know, I didn't know them at all, but she asked, my mother asked asked him if it would be all right if he'd look after me till I got something to do. So he promised he would.
So did you go right to his place then when you first
No,
came?
I didn't go. I went to work in a logging camp. I didn't even go in. I just went in the store and said hello and told him I was going to go to work in the logging camp up
there. How did you get the work?
This man here that I came over with, he got me a job up there.
Mm.
Yeah. And I was pretty good with an axe. So I got along fine. And I paid that lady back that loaned me the money to come over to this country. I paid her back the first 4 months I was here.
Well, tell me about when the first day you came here and you landed, you stopped in Seattle. Tell me about that.
Well, that was a memorable day now, believe me. Well, I took in at the hotel down there by the police station, together with this fella here that took me up to the woods there. He used to stay there. I can't think of the name of it now, you know. Well, it was anyway. And the lady that run that hotel, he says, "Why, you ain't gonna let that kid go around there dressed like that. He's got to have a suit of clothes." Well, I didn't have no money to get a suit of clothes. So, by golly, she took me to Lippmann's Pacific Outfit and get on 3rd Avenue and bought me that suit right there. Yeah. Gosh, she was a nice lady. I used to see her, you know, going and see her all the time when I come into town. I stayed in the hotel when I come into town.
What was her name?
Hmm?
What was her name?
Her name was Kitty Martin. Yeah, she had been around a lot, you know. She was a nice lady, tall woman.
America was pretty nice when somebody would do that for you.
Yeah. And she didn't ask me, you know, she bought me. I paid $16 for it, you know. That was a big price for it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you did that right away when you first came, that first day?
Yes. Yeah, she took me down there herself and picked out the suit for me. Yeah.
So you stayed there in her hotel then? Then when did you go up to the logging camp?
The following Monday. I stayed in Seattle Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and the following Monday I went up to the camp and went right to work.
What did you do in Seattle those days?
Well, you see, I was visiting people that I knew from the old country, you know. There was a lot of them here them days, you know, in Seattle. I went where they down there on Washington Street. That's where I lived when I first come here, you know, down there on Washington Street. Everything was going, was down there for people without a trade that worked in the woods, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I was, I stayed in that camp at Christmas, and,
This was in Arlington now? Where was this camp?
It was called Carbon Healy. It was 7 miles from Arlington.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And you stayed there till Christmas?
Yes.
How was the food and the living conditions at
that
camp?
In the camp, well, we had our own blankets. We had to take our own blankets. And the bunks were 3 stories high. And straw in the bottom of the bunk, no mattress. And bed bugs. I learned to count to 21 the first night I was there. There was a fellow laying in the bunk below me with a hammer killing bed bugs. You know, and I listened to 1, 2, 3. I could count to 21 the next day when I woke up. Yeah. And 24 men in each bunkhouse. No, the had conditions were no good there then.
How was the food?
They were pretty poor.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, how were the wages?
I was getting 2.5 a day. So that wasn't bad. And paid 5.5 a week for board and room. And the foalish and buckish, you know, the foalish got $3.5 and $4 a day, and the buckish got $3 a day.
What did you do?
No, I was, they call it swamper. That was the same as them days. There was no high leads, it was all ground logging. So we had to cut the trees and clear out so they could get in and choke the logs, you know, and cut down the trees so they could see where they were going with it. So that was my job.
You stayed there just till Christmas time?
Yeah, and then I didn't go back after Christmas.
Did you come here for Christmas? Come to Seattle?
Yes, and that's really when we had a depression in Seattle, 1914. You never seen nothing like it in the other depression. Then I had no money, and did you ever hear of Hotel de Gink? You know where Goodwill is down there on Dearborn Street? Well, it was an old abandoned warehouse, and the loggers, we had our own bedding, you know. So we used to go up there and sleep there at night in that warehouse, and then walk down and keep the blanket bundle in the cell with the saloon keepers in the daytime and pick them up and go up there at night. They couldn't leave it there, they'd steal it. I stayed around there for about 2 months. And then,
what did you eat? You didn't have any money, you said.
Well, I had a little bit, but they helped the fellow out once in a while. There was no relief them days. The Salvation Army used to give us a meal once in a while, you know, coffee. And but you had to borrow, try to get some from the other guy, you know.
Were you discouraged with America when you had to go through that? Were you ready to go back to Sweden?
No, I had no thoughts about that. I could see that I was going to live that way forever, you know.
Uh-huh.
So then I got acquainted with a German boilermaker, old country German. Well, that was a little later on there. You know, I worked off and on in the woods back and forth. And then this boilermaker here got me in at the commercial boiler works as an apprentice boilermaker. And I had a room at the Union Hotel. I paid $6 a month for a room. It was a small little bitty place with just a washstand, you know, and a bed. That's about all there was to it, you know. It had a little dresser in it too. The Japanese fixed it up. He was awful nice to me, you know, that old Japanese. He fixed it up for me and says, otherwise I couldn't have got that low rent. You know, I was only getting 16 cents an hour. 10 hours a day, $1.60 a day. That wasn't much money.
No. And you had to pay $6 a month for the room?
Yes. And $6 a month for the rooms. But I made it fine till my clothes started to wear out.
Yeah.
But then I told the boss down there, by that time I was getting along good in the boiler shop, and I told him I haven't seen my mother for so long, you know, I got to go home and see my mother. It's been over a year, I'd like to get a month off. Well, it's just 1 month, that's all, and you come back, yeah. And so I already had a job in my pocket to go up here and go to work for the city of Seattle. When they were logging off the watershed up there at Cedar River, you know. And I got in a month there, you know, and I made.
About this other job?
Yeah, so I could get to make enough money to buy clothes.
I see.
Because I was out of clothes.
Mm-hmm. And how much did you earn there?
$65.
What did you do?
A bucker. Buck logs. Mm-hmm. I even got a picture of it there.
Why don't you show me later?
Yeah.
Show me later.
Yeah.
So then you did that, and then did you go back to his other job then?
Yes, I went back to learn to be a boilermaker. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I wanted to learn that trade in the very worst way. And then the second time when I run out of clues, the good Lord blessed us with one of the worst windstorms we ever had in Seattle, 6 feet of snow. And the roof started to cave in on the buildings, and me and other Swede got a contract to shovel snow for the roof there, you know. And I got $60 from one building, and I made pretty near $200, you know, shoveling snow in 1916. But then the war broke out, and I went to work in the shipyards, and I have, since that time, I never had no trouble.
But you bought some clothes then with the money that you shoveled snow.
Yeah.
And then you went back to boiler?
Yeah, I went there back to serve out my time. It takes 3 years to learn to be a boilermaker. But I didn't get the whole full 3 years, because when the shipyard started in, then I had to go to work in the shipyard. So I worked in the First World War at the Skinner and Eddy Shipyard and JF Duty Shipyard.
Here in Seattle?
Yes.
Where were you living all this time?
Oh, then I moved up. I lived up here at the... What did they call that hotel on 7th and Union here now?
It's all right.
Yeah.
But you got a better room anyway, huh?
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name now, but I got to, you know, it's a funny thing, and I lived there for 3 years.
That's all right.
Yeah. It's on 7th and Pike.
So you didn't have to go on the service?
No, they on account of working in the shipyards. I was made a riveter foreman in 1918 in the duty shipyard. I was 21 years old. And in 1917, when the draft, when we had to register for the draft, and I was, because on account of my experience in that boiler shop, I know the work, and they didn't have that kind of men with that experience here in Seattle. You know, they were trying heaven and earth to dig up a few experienced men, you know, for that kind of work. Yeah, that's come in handy all my life.
So did you work among any minority groups, or were you always with Scandinavians?
No. We were Greeks, and I had all the minority. We were together, you know. No, I wasn't around Swedes all the time. Oh, no.
Did you find any difficulty in working with
others? No. No, the kind of people that came to this country at that time, they were good people from all over the world. I had a lot of Greek friends in Seattle. They came just like me. And Czechoslovakians and Russians and everything you can think of, you know. There was an awful lot of people came here them years from all over the world.
Black?
There was not too many black people in Seattle at that time, and they didn't follow that kind of work.
I see. Do you remember when you saw your first black person?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, no, that I seen him in Gothenburg.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, in Sweden.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah. No, I seen black people in Sweden before
so
I come.
So you were used to that?
Oh, yeah.
What was the most difficult thing when you came here? What was the hardest thing for you?
Well, I can't pinpoint anything.
How did you learn the language?
Yeah, I learned that right away. You know, started to pick up, you know, from, you know, I've never gone to school at all. Mm-hmm. Just learned to read the papers, you know, and learned to read and write. And always had a very good memory.
Just from other people then?
Yeah. You see, but you know, I never was able to shake the Swedish accent. That is something that stays with me. If I had been a little more careful, I guess I could have, you know, but I'd get along for it.
How long did it take before you really felt at home?
Before I what?
Felt at home. Felt like this was your
I kind of felt at home right away, you know. Oh. You see, on account of being so young too, you know, they were so good to me, the people everywhere. I had no trouble.
Good.
Never. I worked hard. Whenever I got something to do, I did it. Mm-hmm. And if you work hard and live right, you know, nobody abused me in any way. I was treated absolutely perfect wherever I went. Yes.
So how long did you stay in the shipyards?
Well, I stayed in the shipyard till they closed them down.
When was that?
And in 1920, they closed the shipyards down in 1919. And then I went to work. I was a riveter on the telephone building on 3rd Avenue and a riveter on the medical building here when they first started that. And then I hired out as a boiler maker for the Alaska Railroad up in Alaska. And I went up there in 1921, and I stayed there till 1959.
What did you do in Alaska all that time, and where were you?
Well, that's really I was in Fairbanks. Uh-huh. And I went to Anchorage first. And then they transferred me up to a town called Nenana. And then when they built the bridge across the Yukon River, they moved the roundhouse that I was working in up to Fairbanks. And we all got laid off. And when I got laid off there, I started to look around and started to work for miners there. And then I got the gold fever. And boy, I didn't go back to the railroad anymore. So I started to prospect for gold, and a bunch of fellas, we went in and took a lease on some mining ground. We didn't make any money on it, except a lot of experience. And And then when the U.S. smelting and mining and refining company come into Fairbanks, there was the manager, his name was Norman C. Steins, for the operating, starting into, well, when he got started to operate there. So he told me, he said, I hear you are an iron worker and I want you to come to work for me, because I'm going to need you pretty bad when we start building powerhouses and dredges and siphon lines here. If you're a riveter, I understand iron work. Yes. Well, he said, I give you a job. So I went to work for him in 1924. And then I worked for him from 1924 till 1959 for the same company. Yeah.
Did you stay in Fairbanks then all the time?
Yeah. Well, I came out in the winter here, you know, times, a lot of times. I didn't stay there all the time, but I got vacations in the winter to come out.
Wages were really good up there, weren't they?
Yeah, well, yes, I was doing all right, you know. I never lost a day during the Depression. Then I got married in 1922 here in Everett. My wife lived up there with me.
Oh, where did you meet her?
I met her in Seattle when I worked in the shipyard.
What was her name?
Her name was Edith Holmquist. That was her name before she married me.
Was she from Sweden also?
She was born in Sweden and raised in Norway. And she was about 8 years old when her mother took her here to Seattle with her. So she was about 8 years old when she came to Seattle.
Just her mother?
Yeah, with her mother.
Not her father?
No, her father was an alcoholic. Mm. And, you know, well, they were divorced, you know. And that was something they didn't do in Sweden them days, is divorce. Mm-hmm. And so her father stayed in Sweden. She never came here, but her mother, then her mother took her with her and came here to Seattle.
I see. Where in Sweden was she from?
Well, her mother came from the middle part of Sweden, Mälaren or Västmanland is the name of the place. One of the oldest parts of Sweden. And her grandmother, my wife's grandmother, came from the town of Arboga. And that town of Arboga is one of the oldest cities in Sweden. And her father was from a province called Hälsingland, and that's further north a ways.
Where did they live in Norway?
Hammerfest, in the most northerly city in the world. Yeah.
Why did they decide to come over here then?
Well, you see, she thought that she'd have a better chance here, you know. So she was an expert cook, you know, and everything. She was
Where did you meet? What was her name? Your wife's name?
Edith.
Edith. Where did you meet her?
Here in Seattle.
And where?
Well, I met her at her mother's home.
How did you do that?
Well, her mother kept boarders. And she had a pretty good-sized boarding house. But I never stayed there, but I used to go up there and have a home-cooked meal once in a while. My wife was very unfortunate. She worked as a sorter and marker in the Washington Laundry down here in Lake Union. And she learned that trade, sorting and marking. She was doing very good at it. And going down to the basement to get a hold of a special washing, you know, that had to be washed by hand. She slipped on the concrete steps there, you know, because it was steam in the basement. And and broke two vertebrae below her shoulder blade in her back. And them days, they didn't know how. they didn't know how to fix that, you know. So they bundled her up, you know, and she never could patinate. Now she worked in one stretch after that under any circumstance.
Her back hurts about all day?
Yeah. She had to be so extremely careful.
Did that happen before you met her?
Yeah.
So what was your wedding like?
Huh?
What was your wedding like?
Oh, that was fine. We had a beautiful marriage, but no kids.
Oh.
No. And I was lucky enough to be able to take care of her. Had study work all the depression.
She didn't work after you were married?
No, she couldn't.
Oh.
No. She couldn't be 8 hours on her feet in one stretch under any circumstance. She could only work at intervals. That's why she stayed with her mother and helped her. You know, she'd go and wash up some dishes maybe or and clean a room. And then she had to lay down and take a little rest and when she could work like that, she could work, you know.
I see.
Yeah.
Did she stay here in Seattle when you went to Fairbanks then?
Well, we didn't get married. We wasn't married when I went to Fairbanks, no.
Oh.
No, I went up in 1921. Mm-hmm. And then when I come out in 1922, we got married. And I went, we got married in Everett. And I went back up to Alaska then, and then she came later on, and we lived together out on the creek there. So
she did come up to Alaska?
Yeah, she was there as long as I was there.
I see. So then you stayed all the year through?
Yeah, then all the years, you were, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she, sometimes she had to go outside because she had to have doctor help, and it was not very easy to get that up there. But take it as a rule, we made out pretty good. I got a whole flock of pictures here of when we, yeah, we had it awful nice up there.
Did you have a house?
Yeah, I built the house 10 by 12. No, 12 by 14 inside the log cabin.
Did you have a church wedding?
Eh?
Did you have a church wedding?
No. No. No, there were some friends of ours up at Arlington. And we had the wedding at his house.
I see. Were you active in a church in Alaska?
No. No, I had no chance.
Oh.
You see, I was living out on the creeks, you know. Mm. Well, I'll tell you how that comes about. I go from when we got married. Well, then after a while, then I moved in to a company house when I got to be winchman on a dredger there. And I was winchman there for first the construction when they built the dredges and siphon lines and things. I was on all that. Then I got to be winchman on there. And then I got to be made dredgemaster. When I was dredgemaster, I was dredgemaster for 18 years. And I had a company house we lived in. I had free house and light and fuel and a pickup. The company pickup. So then we had nice places to live, electricity and everything, you know, when I got to be dredgemaster. And so she stayed with me off and on. There was, like I said, times she went out and I stayed in and she went out, you know. Yeah, that's That's just about the end of my experience. Well, then, of course, I was with them then all them years with the company, and I'm getting a pension from them now, too, you know. I got, been there 40 years, I worked for them, 38 years. From 1924 till 1959. Except for 5 years during the war, they shut down the dredges because they couldn't get steel to run them, you know. Shortage of steel. And I worked down here at the Associated Shipyard in Seattle. I was riveting foreman over there for 5 years at my old trade again in the Second World War.
Then you lived here in Seattle.
Yeah, then we lived out on Henderson Street out there in Seattle. We had a house out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did your wife cook Swedish food?
Oh, she was a crackerjacket cook. My. Yeah, we used to have, and she made lutefisk for the old-timers up on the creek. Yeah.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she was sure. Oh, yeah, she was a favorite. Well, when they seen me build that first house, they said, when that Chichaka wife of yours sees that there doghouse you're going to put her in, she'll go right back to Seattle. No woman wants to live in Waikiki. Not even a bedroom. Are you crazy, man? Well, I didn't have nothing to do with much. I had to do the best I could with what I had, you know. Oh, we'll have a bedroom after a while. After a while, there won't be no after a while. She go right. And when she seen the cabin, she said, oh, my gosh, I always wanted a dollhouse, and look at that. She says, now I can live in one. So we got along all right.
She was satisfied, though.
Eh?
She was satisfied with it.
Yeah. Then I got her a dog. She had her own dog and a little sled, and she could go wherever she wanted, you know.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Old Buster. He'd be looking at her, you know. I got it. I started to wag his tail the minute she was going to get ready to go.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How did she like Alaska?
Oh, fine. You know, Norway, she was raised for the Northern Fairbanks, even.
Mm-hmm. She was used to the cold winters.
Yes, so
yeah. You were telling me before that you had introduced someone that had written a book.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you about that. Well, then this Catherine Winslow was her name, and she got a hold of this old data, you know. And then. No, Chicago. She lived in Chicago.
Oh, how did you meet her?
Well, here is how I met her. She had a relative in Chicago that had been in the Klondike, and she was very much interested in the old Klondike. And then she came up to Fairbanks, and she stayed in the Nordale Hotel. And somebody told her to go out and see me because I knew some of these old-timers on the creeks there. And I wasn't exactly an old-timer, but I had been there quite a while too, you know. So this is back in the 30s, you know. She wrote that book about 1936, 37, something like that.
What was the name of the book again?
The Big Pan Out. And so I took her down and introduced her to this old lawyer, you know, and she got a lot of information from him. And then this Charlie Anderson, that was so notorious, you know, that he had paid a sporting girl her weight in gold for to marry him, you know, see. And they had a lot of stories like that, which wasn't true, a lot of. And that he had lost his money, you know, he'd made putting $1 million up there by round the dance halls, and he never did no such a thing. he went down to San Francisco and bought the property and got cleaned out at the time of the earthquake. And I knew a fellow that knew him well, you know, and I introduced, so she got the right information from him. And then there was so many other fellows that I knew that I could introduce her to, and she talked to him, and the book made a hit. Yeah, maybe this book is going to make a hit. When you get through talking to Matt now, there is an interesting fellow to talk to. Well, that's how she got her information, you know. And I got a first edition copy from her with a lot of she wrote a lot of nice things in it. And I lost the trunk with all my books in it. Never got it back. My wife had gathered up first editions. She had first editions by Jack London, Rex Beach, and Mark Twain, and she was, well, you know, we'd done an awful lot of reading up there, you know. Mm-hmm. And we lost all our books in that trunk, you know. Say them first editions would have been worth a lot of money.
Was that when you were moving down here?
The Alaska Steamship. I didn't register the trunk right, you know. I just sent it freight. I didn't take out insurance. I should have insured it for $1,000, you know. But you see, foolish. I never. And somebody got away with it. Somebody that knew what was in it got away with it. And I was fighting, and I was with them for 2-3 years, but I had no chance. I didn't have nothing.
Work mostly among Scandinavians up there in Alaska?
Oh, no. There was... I had Eskimos working for me there, too. Yes.
How were they as far as working?
Oh, the Eskimos are the finest people in the world. You can't imagine how nice they are.
Why do you say that?
Well, they are honest, reliable, and good workers. And they have good characters. Their only weakness, of course, is the liquor, you know, if they get. But they don't go to extremes with that either. Mm. I had four of them from Kotzebue that came regular every year, and I was prepared when they had to go home and start hunt for seal in the fall. I let them go, but they were always welcome back next year. Yeah. And they're good to their children, and the children are well behaved. They, believe me, they are good people, the Eskimos.
How about working conditions? What changes did you see from when you first came here until you quit work?
How do you mean?
Working conditions. What changes did you see?
You know, between.
In your working, your places you work, your working conditions.
Between Sweden and here.
Yeah, when you first came here to this country.
Oh, when
now,
yeah.
When you quit work.
Well, you see, I'd had so little experience back in Sweden that I didn't really grasp enough of it to make a comparison.
No, when you first came here, though, when you first came here to this country.
To America.
Until you quit work here in America. You know, over the years that you were working in America.
Oh, you mean while I've been here? Mm-hmm. Well, I can't say nothing but the best. They say people go bad through bad environment. How in the name of God could anyone have had the worst environment than I had when I lived in the Union Hotel? Gambling houses on Washington Street open there. I even got shot in the leg in a gambling house there. Standing there, they came and held the place up at 218. I used to go in and rubberneck, you know. I didn't play myself. I had no money to play with. And a guy come in and he fired a revolver through a table and hit me in the leg here. And I didn't even know I was shot till the fella said, "Say, kid, you're bleeding. What's the matter?" And I looked. The Chinaman took me off to the doctor. I spent 4 days in the Seattle General Hospital with him. No, it's up to the man himself. Absolutely. I was among the worst. Gamblers, prostitutes, everything you can think of, and no home life.
What kept you from going bad?
To Sweden?
No, what kept you from going, becoming bad, like you say? Like the rest of
I was raised a good Christian. My mother was very religious. And whatever she told me stuck in my mind. And I had no use for crooked stuff. I had no use for any shady stuff. But I'm not a religious person. I don't go to church. I really got away from that up in Alaska. There was no chance to go there. There was no churches there.
No.
I was 30 miles out on the creeks away from where the churches were, and working Sunday and every day in the summertime. And then in the wintertime, cold and miserable. The idea is this. My wife and I never did get in that environment. So we were around people like that. I belonged to all the Masonic, I belonged to the Masons there, and I used to go there when I come into town, because Masonry is a religion too, you know that. So.
How about Swedish organizations?
Huh?
Have you belonged to Swedish organizations?
Yeah, I belong to the Swedish club.
Here? Now?
Or yeah.
There wasn't any up there, was there?
Oh, no. No, I belong to the Swedish club. Now I know the hotel. I stayed in Waldorf Hotel down here during the war on 7th and Pike. Yeah, there is other Swedish, like Vasa and all, but I never belonged to any of that.
When you first came to America, did you belong to any then?
No.
You came back from Alaska?
Not till after that, you know. No, you see, I belong to the Boilermakers Union. I'm the oldest member in the Boilermakers Union in Seattle today.
Is that right?
One of the oldest. 1916, I was initiated to the Boilermakers.
Yeah. When did it start, that union, you know?
Oh, the union is very old, you know. That was about 50 years old then, even. But out of the members here in Seattle, we have a retiree Boilermakers club we go to every Saturday, every second Saturday in the month in the summertime. So out of those that joined in 1916, I'm about the only. There's not hardly any of them left anymore. They seem to think that I'm probably the only one, and that's in good standing with the union now, so that they know where I am and that I'm in contact.
Did you ever go back to Sweden?
Yes. I've been back 2 times.
Oh, when was that?
I was back 4 years ago. I stayed 5 months.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the first time, or...?
No, the first time was in 1948. Well,
right after the war.
Yeah. My mother was sick, and we were moving the dreads up in Alaska, and I got a letter, you know, from my brother that, Kelly, I don't think her mother is gonna last much longer. So. by gosh, I went and told the superintendent I'm going to Sweden and see my mother. And moving the dreads here in the middle of the winter? No. Yes, I said, I am. No. He said, yes. I said, yes. There's no about it. I said, that ain't, your dreads moving isn't going to stop because I go. But you see, I was dreads master on it, and I had done the work so far. Well, he said, you know where everything is. Well, I'll be there when I come back. But I said, I'm going. Well, okay, so I went. I only stayed 20 days.
Did you go by yourself, or did your wife go
to you? No, that much of a hurry-up trip, you know, and she wasn't feeling too good either. It was just to see my mother, and I'm glad I did, because I would never have seen her again if I hadn't gone. We met on the road. Well, there was I told her I was coming home, and she didn't believe it. So the village was on two small hills, like, and there was a meadow in between. And this was just before Christmas. So I met the fellow on the road, and I asked him, I said, is that trail between the in the meadow open like it used to be when I was a kid? Yes. Say, wait a minute. He says, when you was a kid, yeah. Say, Michael, I know you do. Well, then we had gone to school together. And he said, say, he says, I met an old lady on the road, coming up the road, and it was my mother. I didn't know her.
You didn't?
And she didn't know me. Well, he said, there's your mother out there. Well, I said, and I had a heck of a time to catch up with her. You know, I was a little bit out of shape, you know. And the first thing she did when she seen me, she said, oh my, but you got fat. She said, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, well, anyway, I got to see my mother.
Did you see a lot of changes in Sweden?
Yes. Oh, yes. They're living good back there now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yes, I've seen a lot of changes there.
Like what?
Well, the old people that didn't have nothing when I was a kid, you know, they live good now. And, oh, I suppose, but I think as a whole, people are more religious in Sweden than they are here.
Oh, do you?
Yes. I think so, yeah. It seemed that way to me. You know. I don't know if it's because I haven't been associating with the right kind of people. Yeah.
And they've been hurt by the war? They hadn't been hurt by the war there.
Well, they were hit, not except financially, I suppose, they got it, you know, see. So they, and they're short of so many raw materials, they're short of oil for one thing, they have and coal, they have either oil or coal in the country. They got a ship in all that, well, that's, and at that though, they got along pretty good.
And you went back again 4 years ago?
Yeah, that's when I stayed 5 months. That's when I really got to see the country. Yeah, and then if you have, you probably haven't got no time now, but if you have the time, I'd like to show you pictures over the center part of Sweden. They, there was a fellow working here at Boeing's, and he had worked for Volvo before he became an engineer, before he came here, and he decided to go back to Sweden again. He liked it better back there, so he went back to Volvo again, you know, and I met him when he lived out there in Rainier Valley. And when I came back there, he took his summer vacation and he drove me around Lake Mälaren, they call it, you know, where the cradle of Swedish civilization first started. He drove me around all over there, Gripsholm Castle and all them places, you know, all them old towns that I wanted to see, that I read about when I was a kid in school, you know. So I really had, a chance to see the country. And that's the beginning of civilization in Sweden, right around that lake.
Was it in that lake?
Mälaren is the name of it. And it's other lakes in connection with it. And it goes from Gothenburg to Stockholm, you know, like that. They even have a boat that goes from Gothenburg to Stockholm. Goes through locks, you know, and everything. All them old towns, you know, like Ulricehamn and I can't think of the name of them now, but the old cities that were just as old as Stockholm, some of them older. Have you ever been to Sweden?
What has it meant to you to be Swedish?
Eh?
What has it meant to you to be Swedish?
Well, I say, I never thought about that. Well, I haven't. It meant something to be Swedish, you know. I guess we're all more or less proud of our ancestry, you know. There's a lot of bad Swedes, but a lot of good ones too.
Something particular about the Swedes that you appreciate?
Well, they're no better than the Americans. No. There are a lot of things about, I've been here so long now, you know, there are a lot of things about the American people that I really admire, you know. And the same way about the Swedish people. So I'd say it's just about a standoff.
You still speak Swedish?
Hmm?
You still speak Swedish?
Oh, you bet I do.
Can you say something in Swedish for me?
Ja, vad ska det vara? Jag ska språka. You don't understand Swedish.
I understand you.
You do? Yeah. Yeah. Ja, det är trevligt att träffa någon som kan tala svenska, och jag kan ju tala lika gott som jag nästan. Det är ju en del ord som var nya som jag inte visste när jag var hemma, och en del som jag har glömt bort, men inte några vidare många som jag har glömt bort. Men jag kan tala svenska lika bra som jag någonsin gjort.
Tack för idag.